Welcome back to another episode of Cohen's Corner. The Mets have won 7 games in a row and have gone 5-0, a perfect 5-0 homestand to close out their games at home this week. And we have a very special guest on our episode this week that has been witness to all of those fantastic home wins. This week, we welcome Colin Cosell to the podcast. Colin is one of the current Mets PA announcers at Citi Field, and he has a 20-year background in radio, television, and entertainment, which has culminated with his becoming a professional announcer, not only for the New York Mets, but also for the New York Riptide, the New York Open, the Brooklyn Cyclones, and the Stony Brook University Seawolves. He's also won 3 Emmy Awards and is a great home cook, which he wanted to make sure we got into the introduction. Colin, you are a very familiar voice to all Mets fans. We're so excited to have you on the podcast, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me. I love the idea of finally being a familiar voice to the to Mets fans. You know, it's been kind of a work in progress and some growing pains. You know, replacing the great Alex Anthony after 17 years is no small task. And so I cannot tell you how much I appreciate that. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing we like to start off our episodes with, especially when we have guests, is to kind of take a little trip down memory lane and ask them how they kind of first got into, you know, baseball and rooting for the Mets. And so I guess in your case, I'm wondering, you know, kind of how you obviously you've worked in several different sports, but I'm wondering your story with baseball specifically. What are kind of your earliest memories of falling in love with the game or just becoming a baseball fan in general?
You know, it's kind of organic the way it worked out. I was 6 years old when the Mets won in 1986. And that was the first time I started really paying attention to baseball, because it was the first time I was bearing witness to a team in New York, in any of the big four sports, winning a championship. And the excitement around that, the electricity, the headlines, the news coverage, you know, classmates showing up in Mets gear. They didn't know why. Their parents were just slapping it on them. I mean, I'm in first grade. And that excitement and that electricity drew me in. And I was like, I want to get to know this sport a little bit better. And that sparked what would end up being a 32-year journey until I became their PA announcer. So it was kind of serendipitous and crazy and organic and cool.
That's awesome. And I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up the fact that I was reading something and I thought it was really interesting that your grandfather, who many know, was the great broadcaster Howard Cosell, and the fact that I believe it was his first big job he got with the Mets in 1962, and the fact that you now broke through with the same team, I just think that's really cool. And I wonder if that's something that's gone through your mind at all.
Oh, 100%. And it was something that it took me a little while to recognize and realize with a lot of things from my grandfather's career, because, you know, by the time he retired from everything, I was 3 years old. And I mean, I'm still trying to figure out the whole walking and running thing. So trying to figure out my family lineage was not on the top of my priority list. But, you know, my grandfather left his law practice when he was 38 years old, when most people, especially in that day and age, were thinking about retirement. And he decided, no, I'm going to follow my dreams and become a sports broadcaster or a sports broadcast journalist. And so I was 38 years old when I got my big break as a professional public address announcer with the Mets. And it just so happened that, you know, it took him a few years until he got that gig in 1962 as a beat reporter for the Mets for this brand new team. And then 56 years later, I got to follow in the footsteps. So any parallels I have with him are like really cool to me. You know, like it's because we're very, very different people. You know, my background is in theater and comedy, and his background is in law. You know, I grew up in the age of the internet, and he grew up in the age of like the printing press. So, you know, any parallels that we do have, and obviously there's no way I'm going to achieve the amount of fame he had, but so any parallels are definitely I'm aware of now and very, very proud of.
It's interesting that you mentioned your background in theater and comedy, which I know we chatted a little bit on Twitter before this. I also love theater myself, did theater all through high school and college. And I guess in that vein, I'm kind of wondering, you know, how exactly this job as a PA announcer with the Mets came about, or I guess for that matter, how you kind of transitioned from that background that you just mentioned into doing sports broadcasting that you're doing today. It must have been, I guess the job of PA announcer at a stadium, I feel like isn't one that's on a lot of people's radars, and just in terms of, you know, how that even comes about. So I'm curious kind of what that journey was like in terms of your background, like you just mentioned, into actually, you know, doing full-time sports broadcasting.
You know, it's funny because when people ask me about my career, I'm like, it was definitely not a straight line. It was much more of a question mark that ends in an exclamation point. So yeah, I was about 5 years old when I watched my grandfather do his speaking of everything for ABC Radio 770. And I did my first ever air check without even knowing he was doing it. I sat on his lap, I put on his headphones, and I talked into a microphone. He was doing it remotely, by the way. And I was just in love with a microphone. I just fell in love right then and there. It's just like, all right, this is the coolest thing in the world. I don't know how it works, but I love it. And then I quickly realized that I also love entertaining people and being in front of audiences. Like, I feel much more comfortable in front of a crowd of 45,000 people than I do talking to someone one-on-one. Not to say that I'm more socially awkward on one-on-one. I just am anyway, because I'm a big goofball. But all that aside, you know, you don't really have a radio station or a TV studio or anything, at least not when I was growing up, when you're in elementary school, middle school, or even high school. And that outlet was theater. And it just so happened that I could sing. I could carry a tune. So I did my first show at 6 years old. My elementary school did a production of Oliver Twist, and I got the lead role of Oliver. And then I was in a high school production of Sound of Music in third grade, playing Kurt von Trapp and in the Sound of Music. And then any opportunity I got to be in front of a crowd, really. And I didn't really get a chance to talk into a microphone and cover sports or anything, because it was not a viable option until college. I got my first break into radio at age 19, doing overnights for an oldies radio station out here on Long Island, 92.1 FM, WLNG, the home of 10,000 golden oldies. And I had no right being there. Yeah, well, thank you. I had no right doing it. I didn't know half the songs I was playing. It was a crash course in music, which actually turned me into, you know, my other passion, which is I'm a huge audiophile. And then, you know, throughout college, it was doing more theatrical productions and the like, and then started to do a little light PA work here and there. I always love making people laugh. So as soon as I was out of college, January of 2001, I tried my hand at stand-up comedy, fell in love with that, and continued doing that for 17 years. You know, the latter part of which I was pretty much producing shows and was emceeing them. I would be the host, which was a lot easier because then I could just do crowd work. I mean, it was really lazy at the end of the day is what it comes down to. I was not writing jokes anymore. I was just kind of doing it on the fly. And doing voiceover work and trying to use my voice in any way, shape, or form that I could, all the while kind of avoiding sports. And the reason for that is I was in college, and one of my professors taught me about my own grandfather and was misinformed. He said when Cosell retired in 1984, and I'm like, that's not right. He retired in 1983. And I didn't have it in my heart to correct him, but I also was trying to wrap my head around the fact that I was being taught about my own grandfather in college. And so I was like, there's no way I can fill these shoes. It's impossible. So I kind of avoided it until I was in my late 20s, and a dear friend of mine who's a TV producer was just like, dude, it's your legacy. It's your calling. This is what you're supposed to do. Like, just go after it. So I did. And then quickly realized that, you know, as I was approaching the age of 30, there were a ton of kids coming out of the Newhouse School in Syracuse University who were young, fresh, very inexpensive because they're young and fresh out of school, and safe. You know, they're very cookie cutter kind of class, all very good and talented at what they did, but they were taught to do things a very specific way. And, you know, in the turn of the century, the turn of the millennium, that's kind of the direction this country went with its sports broadcasting. Less personality, more just here's what it is and blah, blah, blah. And so no one was willing to take a chance on me. It was a 2-year process before I finally landed a gig with MSG Varsity covering high school sports in the tri-state area. And that was an incredible experience. That's where I earned my 3 Emmys. I was in the right place at the right time. I was narrating and helping produce a show. But, you know, still, that's hardware that I own and my name's on them, and they can't take that away from me. And then that went under, and it became pretty much strictly online content. So I actually fell into bartending. A buddy of mine owned a bar a couple blocks up the street from my apartment, said, hey, I need someone to fill in on Tuesdays. You want to do this? I'm like, I'm not making money right now. So yes, I do. And that quickly escalated into doing 2 to 3 nights a week. And then I got poached by a big sports bar in Manhattan and quickly became their head bartender and then manager. And I started doing their Thursday night trivia. And there was a company that would give us the it was the New York City Trivia League, NYC Trivia League. And one of the owners of the company came to see me host it at the bar I was managing. And I used to do a roll call of all the employees, the staff that were working that night. And I did it like the Chicago Bulls. So I would start it with Sirius by Alan Parsons Project and build up that drama introduced the whole staff on the floor and everything. He heard that and loved it. And just so happened that he was partial owner of a professional ultimate frisbee team in the AUDL, the American Ultimate Disc League. And the team is called the New York Empire. And he asked me if I would be their PA. And technically, that was my first foray into being a public address announcer, at least on a professional level. And then while I was working at that very same bar, I met a gentleman who was working in productions for the Mets. And we became very, very close and very quick friends. And in April of 2018, I was at a Mets game. It was a Sunday. It was April 15th. And it was 45 degrees. It was misty. It was miserable. It was a 4 o'clock start. It was horrible out. And I sent him a text. I'm like, hey, I'm at the game. He's like, awesome. He said, oh, that's awesome. I want to show you around, show you production. I also want to talk to you about something. And so I managed to escape the elements for a few minutes. And he said, you know, this is where the PA booth is. Here's our control room. Here's this. Here's that. Little did I know that I was surrounded by a bunch of people who would become my coworkers in 5 weeks' time. He said, listen, we're looking for a new PA announcer. I can't do anything to guarantee you the job at all. He's like, it's not my decision, but I can, if you give me a demo, I can put it in the right hands. And that got the ball rolling. And 5 weeks later, I got the job, changed my life, changed everything. And I know it's a long-winded story, but it's a crazy one. And I has since kind of spiraled into all the other PA gigs that I'm doing now. So it's that's the whole story. I know that's not what you wanted, Elizabeth. I know you wanted
that's
something
exactly
quick
what we wanted. I was really interested in hearing your, you know, career arc, because it sounds like, you know, you had that initial, you know, introduction to sports, obviously with everything your grandfather did, but you didn't actively pursue that, I guess, you know, right away. So it's interesting that you have all these different interests and that this is kind of where you've landed at the moment. So that was a really fascinating story to hear. Thank you so much for sharing.
Well, no, the craziest thing about it is the job with the Riptide is actually the true culmination of everything I've ever done: stand-up comedy, theater, play-by-play, and color commentary, and anchoring for MSG Varsity and eventually Verizon Files One Sports. And with the Riptide, I can just go nuts. Like, I do play-by-play. I try to be funny. I antagonize the other team. Like, that is strongly encouraged to just rip the other team apart whenever I get a chance. And get the crowd riled up. So it's like everything all wrapped into one when I do the Riptide. It's wild.
And that's nuts, like the path you've taken. I know everybody in any occupation they have, they always usually have a story of how they got to where they are, but that is a very well-rounded story. It seems like you've made a lot of stops along the way, but I'm sure that's also helped you probably in your career, because you've experienced so much and so many different kinds of people that you're kind of prepared for anything in a way.
I mean, it definitely toughens your skin. You know, when you go from winning, three Emmys 1 year and then like less than a year later, you're bartending. And I'm like, that's kind of supposed to be the opposite. Like, you're supposed to like come out of college, get a bartending gig and like, you know, try to land a job. So it zigs and zags. And to be where I'm at now, I'm obviously eternally grateful. And to have the job that I have is like a dream come true. And then looking back on it, I'm like, you know, to your point, Jake, it makes it all worthwhile.
So I'm curious then, so now obviously working at Citi Field doing PA announcing with the Mets' other PA announcer, Marisol Castro, I guess maybe take us kind of behind the scenes of what your day looks like if you're just doing, you know, a Mets game at Citi Field. What kind of preparation goes into it before the game? Is there anything, things that you have to take care of like after the game? I'm kind of curious at some of, you know, all the preparation and additional work that you have to do before, you know, we hear those in the lineups announced at 1:10 or 7:10 p.m. at Citi Field.
That's highly confidential stuff. No, I'm just kidding. It's not confidential at all. It's kind of a funny process. Before I go into a series, I'll go through the opposing team's 40-man roster, see if there are any names that stand out to me that might be difficult. I want to make sure that, like, getting pronunciation is paramount to my bosses. If I stumble over a word, no harm, no foul. I mispronounce a name, that's a problem. So I make sure that I get that lined up. First thing I do when I go to the ballpark, and this is literally every single time I go to the ballpark, is I gawk. I just look up at this ballpark and I'm like, my voice fills the stadium. And that's something that never gets old. It's something I will never take for granted. It's something that blows my mind every single time, because there are 30 Major League Baseball ballparks on this planet, and my voice fills one of them. So that's the first thing I do, is kind of like a gratitude and kind of like a pinch myself moment. Then I get inside and all hell breaks loose. Now then I get in, and the first thing I do is I you know, go around, say hi to everyone in our tremendous, unbelievably talented production team. And then I'll go into my booth, go through my scripts for the game, see if there are any wacky pronunciations, any copy I'm going to have to read. If there's a ceremony, there's going to be like a large bit of copy. Read through it, make sure that it's, you know, grammatically correct or that is going to flow better than it might when the person was typing it up. And so I'll get all of that in order. I'll rehearse it a couple times, so I'm not looking at it for the first time ever fresh, because you have a greater chance of stumbling with that. Then I'll write out my lineups, make sure I've got everything squared away on my lineup card, and again, make sure that all pronunciations are correct. And then I go and grab a bite to eat, you know. But City Field's got so many great eateries, so, you know, I'll go around and try something new. I still have yet to try the Polar.
I was going to ask, actually, if you tried the Alonzo Burger yet, but I'll ask you later.
I've not tried it yet. I'm still trying to drop the COVID-20 I put on, and that thing is like 3 million calories, so I'm going to wait until I get to a certain weight to try it. But I've heard great things. But if I'm short on time or something else has come up, I will go to the press commissary, and they generally have very good food when they put out as well. So I'll have a bite to eat, you know, shoot the breeze, watch TV, watch batting practice, you know, just kind of hang out my booth and then just get ready for game time. And it's usually at about, this season it's been 6:52 for a 7:10 start, so 8 minutes before the top of the hour of the starting time, I'll have my first announcement. It'll be a honorary first pitch, a ceremonial first pitch, the national anthem, and then my favorite part is the starting lineups every time. Like there's so much fun in that, and there's no score yet. There's no reason for anyone to be distressed. Everyone's, you know, optimistic and happy to be there. And I know that whoever the hot hitters are at that time, if it's Conforto, Alonzo, McNeil, Villar, VR, Pilar, you know, whatever the case may be, or if it's DeGrom pitching, I know that in that moment, there's going to be that synergy between the fans and myself of me announcing their name and them going nuts. And I feed off of that electricity, like, it gets me. Like, I'm usually, even if it's freezing cold in the booth, I'm like sweating at the end of it just from sheer excitement. And then announce the first batter, and away we go.
What was that like for you, I want to know, in 2018 when you got to announce David Wright's final games and just getting to announce his name when nobody had been able to announce his name in a pretty long time?
And the only other people to do it were Alex Anthony and his backup, my mentor, Rob Rush. So to be the third person to ever announce him at Citi Field was humbling. It was an honor. It was probably more nerve-wracking than the first game I announced on June 2nd against the Cubs. It was also one of those things where I wanted to pay my respect to Alex Anthony. So I listened to a bunch of recordings of the way he would do it, and then I put my own spin on it so that there was kind of a familiarity for the fans as well. Not that they could hear me. Like, they saw him come out. They heard the song come on. They were going nuts. And there was like, I mean, yeah, no one was paying attention, but that doesn't matter to me. I'm still doing my job, and I'm still going to be a professional as soon as that microphone opens. I told you I'm a goofball, but when the mic is open, I'm a consummate professional. And so it was something that will stand out as one of the top three moments for forever as a PA announcer, the honor of being able to call up someone so respected and beloved in the organization, to be the captain of a team, to see them, you know, to a World Series, and you know, everything that he did, just a tremendous athlete and a tremendous captain, and a fans captain as well. It was just an honor and so nerve-wracking.
That's awesome. And something else I was kind of wondering, you know, when you were talking about how there's all sorts of different things you have to read during the game, whether it's, you know, different announcements or the player lineups. And I guess another interesting aspect of what you do is also getting to announce different substitutions and pitching changes and things like that that happen throughout the game. How do you actually get that information about knowing for sure who's coming in for who? I guess you can see, you know, different uniform numbers, but do you actually get like a separate line of communication about, you know, those pitching changes or substitutions or things like that, or double switches or what have you, in terms of knowing exactly who's going in where and, you know, what's happening for those in-game changes that people in the stands might not be as aware of if they're not 100% sure who's going where?
Yeah, it's funny. When I took this job, I thought I knew baseball, and then I realized I was kind of aware of the double switch, in some cases triple switch. And then I've got a story for you that is going to blow your mind. But, you know, it's funny, to that point, I was able to work last season during the pandemic with no fans in the stands because I was basically an essential worker for baseball. A player is not officially in the game for as a pinch hitter, pinch runner, or any defensive substitutions until he is announced by the public address announcer. So when a pinch hitter comes in, fans may not notice this, but if they now pay attention to it, pinch hitter comes in, the ump will write it on his card. He will turn around and he will wave up at us. And as soon as he waves, that means this player is officially in the game and you can announce him. Now, if the umpire is not paying attention, or if he's like old timey and it's just like, I don't have to wave to you, as soon as the guy's, you know, as soon as his spike hits the dirt, I'm going to start announcing him in anyway. But that is a part of the rules. He's not in the game until I announce him. So with that said, I have a spotter who sits with me. His name is Nick Bafardi, and Nick is my eyes and ears. If I'm in the middle of a read, he is constantly paying attention to everything going on. I've learned so much from this young man. Am I really at the age I just called him a young man? I call him, he's like my little brother. He's a little brother I never knew I wanted. Like we have a blast in the booth together. He is, he's so in tune to the game and knows what cues to look for. Manager comes out and there's a pinch hitter coming in, a pitching change. You're most assuredly going to get a double switch. He's got his eyes always on the bullpen, keeps an eye on where the pitch count is, when they might be going to the bullpen to see who's warming up. So I can write that down and have an idea of who's going to be coming into the game. But Nick, he keeps me honest. If I'm in the middle of a read and I can't look on the field, Nick, you know, as soon as I finish, Nick will be like, Pillard's coming into the game, moving to left field, and Nimmo's moving from left to center or something like that. And then I'll have to announce those changes. But Nick does that for me. Now, September 11th, 2019, obviously an emotional day. Every time I've had to announce a 9/11 game, because we have a ceremony beforehand, and it was 17 minutes of copy I had to read. And that's something that, you know, is something that's very near and dear to my heart. So it's an emotional thing, and I'm an emotional guy. So at that point, I'm exhausted. I got through, you know, the copy and the ceremony and everything. And then during the seventh inning stretch, I believe it was at some point in the seventh inning, might have been entering the top. No, it was definitely the seventh inning stretch. I finished reading some copy, and the Diamondbacks manager, the D-backs manager, decided to swap out 7 of the 9 players on the field. He performed a septuple switch, and I finished my read, and I'm expecting some changes, and our director goes into my earpiece, and he's like, all right, guys, you ready to go with defensive changes? I was like, hold on, I'm just about to get them from Nick. Now, keep in mind, there's a timer right below City Vision that starts at 2 minutes in between innings, and by 20 seconds, I'm supposed to have the batter in the box. And if there's too many repeat offenses where it's below 20 seconds, MLB will send a strongly worded letter and then start fining us $10,000 per offense. So that is part of my job and part of the stress of my job. With that in mind, time is ticking. We just did the seventh inning stretch, t-shirt toss, this and the other thing. And Nick goes, holy expletive. And I've never heard him panic. Kid is steadfast. He's strong. And I looked up at him, and he's on headset as well. And the director's like, guys, we've got to go with the changes. And Nick goes, they changed the whole freaking team. And he's like, what? And I'm like, all right, I'll start writing down what I know. You let me know what you know. And then pandemonium breaks loose. I get through 4 of the players, and then he's feeding them to me, like as I'm reading out loud, you know, entering the game and playing center, this guy, entering the game and moving to first, this guy, entering the game and, you know, for the Diamondback, blah, 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 blah. And got through all of them. I look up, the clock is ticking down 3, 2, 1. As long as it didn't get to 0, it wasn't going to be my fault because they changed their entire team. But I got all of the changes in. I threw down my headset. Nick and I hugged. I think a tear might have been shed. Like, I had friends that were sitting in the seats in front of the booth. They were turning around like, what the hell just happened? I'm like, I don't know. My wife was at the game. She was on Shea Bridge at the time. She came running back, and she was like, what just happened? I'm like, they changed the whole team on us. And it got to the point where SNY was asking Nick to come in and tell them what the defensive changes were, because it was like, it was craziness. But we got through it. And don't mind the bark in the background. That's my
No, it's bark in the park. Come on. The dogs are invited.
It is. That's Bagel Alonzo Cosell making an appearance on your show. Aww. But that was the craziest, again, wow. Another long-winded story for me, but that was the craziest experience of my life. And without Nick, I wouldn't have been able to get through it.
You deserve a fourth Emmy for that alone. So congratulations on making it through. See, this is the type of drama that you just never think about when you go to a game. It's like the PA announcers knowing who's coming in. I guess I always thought that somehow it was like more automated that there, I don't know, there was like a computer screen you were looking at, but it's actually being fed to you in real time by people looking at the field. So there you go.
It is analog, straight up.
Is there a player that, like, maybe multiple times or even just once gives you a problem pronouncing his name? Like, has there been a player that's come up to you and be like, oh, it's not how I want to pronounce? Or have you had anything happen like that?
Unfortunately, not from the Mets. Alonso's rookie season, he wanted to keep track of who he hit better when they were in the booth. At his batting average or more home runs, he wanted to know how he was doing, Madasol versus myself. But fortunately, I mean, like, I am very, very diligent in making sure I get all the players' name pronunciations correct. I'd heard when I had come in from for a series that, and this is no indictment on Madasol, that James McCann heard his name and thought it was McMahon. Thought they said McMahon, and I'm like, that's impossible. But now, you know, like, so I got that note, like, make sure you hit the in McCann. And I'm like, of course I would. So now I'm like, James McCann. Like, I just turn it into an actual, like, McCannon. The one player that whose name has given me fits, and there's no, it's just one of those mental hiccups for me, is Cincinnati Reds third baseman, Eugenio Suarez. And the reason for that is, I look at it on paper, and it is Eugenio Suarez, maybe Eugenio Suarez, not Eugenio. Like, it doesn't need to be so polysyllabic. And it killed me. I hated him for it. All right. Candidly, I just hated Eugenio Suarez for it. Until we had a lightning storm come into Citi Field one day, we were playing against the Reds, and there was a lightning bolt that, like, cracked, I imagine had to have been, like, right over the parking lot. And it was loud, and it was bright, and it was frightening. And Suarez was off the field faster than I could look down again to see where, like, he heard that crack of lightning. It was gone. He was back in the dugout. He was in the clubhouse. He was not having any part of it. And I was like, all right, respect. But yeah, that's the one name for no reason whatsoever that has always given me fits.
That's interesting. I feel like, I guess I don't always notice when I'm watching, like, other team, you know, Mets playing at other team stadiums, I don't always notice 100%, you know, the PA announcers or how they're pronouncing people's names. But one thing I do notice that, I don't know if you've ever thought about this, but whenever I'm watching Masson, for example, and it's like the Nationals home announcer, for whatever reason, he always says Yan Gomes extremely enthusiastically. And anyone who's listening, next time you, like, watch a Mets game, flip over to, like, the Nationals broadcast, because I always really appreciate the Nationals PA announcer. I don't know who he is, but he always says, like, Yan, and then he just yells Gomes for, like, whatever reason. I don't know why that is, but that's something I always appreciate. I think the extra oomph and enthusiasm that the PA announcers add into people's names, because I think it does add to the excitement. And, you know, like you're saying, it really sounds like, based on what you've said, that there's this whole kind of production being orchestrated that, you know, fans at the stadium don't always think about. And it is kind of akin to, like, a theatrical production. You don't often think, when you're watching, like, a Broadway show, for example, all the work going on behind the scenes to make everyone look good on stage. But that's really kind of what's happening, that you guys are all setting the scene for the action that's taking place on the field. So I always really appreciate the extra oomph that everyone puts into what they're doing, because it does add to the kind of theatricality of going to a baseball game.
Well, and that's the thing. One of the first things I learned was controlling, you know, we do it kind of like by percentage. Let's say bases are loaded, Pete Alonso's up. I'm going to go, like, full throttle, like, Pete Alonso, like, at the top of my lungs, because everyone's amped. They want him to get that big hit. The flip side of that is, say we're losing 13-2 and Alonso's up and it's two outs in the bottom of the ninth and there's no chance of us coming back, I'm going to scale it back considerably, because, you know, no one wants to be like, why is this guy so cheery? We're getting crushed, you know? So it'll be like, Pete Alonso, you know? So it'll still be the same way I say his name, but it'll just be at a different decibel. So I cannot speak to any other PA announcer. We all have our different things. You know, when I first got this job, my boss told me, he's like, you know, give it time. You'll find your voice and I'm sitting there. I'm like, dude, I've been talking to microphones for, like,
I found my voice.
Like, and he was completely right. Like, I just, it was something that just kind of developed. I mean, I don't know when I started growling some names and stuff. I don't know how that happened. It just kind of like happened organically. The one thing I did learn from another PA announcer, the guy who does the Colorado Rockies, whose name is escaping me right now, and it shouldn't be, but I met him. I was at a Rockies game that September of 2018. So I was just about to finish up my season. And I was like, you know, I wanted to meet him. And one of our production guys knew someone in production there. So they got me a pass, went in there, spent a couple innings with him and watched him do his thing. And the guy's got just an amazing voice. So I asked him, how do you go about announcing players' names? You know, do you just announce them just as you see them? Like, what's your process there? And he said something that completely stayed with me and to this day does. He said, I let the player's name tell me how to announce it. And case in point was DJ LeMahieu was still on the Rockies at that point. And he said the way DJs, you know, like DJ kind of like flows the way you'd say a DJ, like, you know, at a club or on the radio. But then LeMahieu kind of has this roundedness to it. So he's like, watch when he comes up to bat. And he happened to be leading off the next inning. And he goes, DJ LeMahieu, like that. And I was like, that was so simple, but amazing. Like, it blew my mind. And that's something that stayed with me and has kind of influenced the way I announce. So, and I also think from being a New York Rangers fan and Joe Tolleson, who's the PA announcer for the Rangers, I realized the way I announced Jacob deGrom during the starting lineup is similar to the way he would announce Henrik Lundqvist. And I had was
extra reverence like thrown in there.
Well, and it was kind of funny because it was something that was completely subconscious. It was not intentional at all, because he'd be like, Henrik Lundqvist. And for me, it's Jacob deGrom. And someone tweeted at me and was just like, you just sound like the dude who does the Rangers. And I'm like, you know what? I'll take that as a compliment. So I can't speak to anyone else's process, but that's, I guess, mine.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think that's good company to be in. Joe Tolleson's really good at what he does. So I would definitely take that as a compliment. But
yeah, he's got dulcet tones, man.
Yeah, he's really good. But so I noticed I was at the game that Harvey started the other day, and I was just wondering, did you know the whole time that when he first came, I missed the first inning when he was on the mound, but I was there for his first at bat. And he came out to his old walk-up song, I think. And then, when you announced his name, it kind of sounded like it was a home team player. Like, you gave him that respect. Did you plan to do that the whole time, or did that kind of just come naturally?
First of all, Jake, I'm your number one fan for you noticing that, because those are the subtle nuances of my job that I figure, like, I don't know if anyone's paying attention, that sort of thing. So thank you. Yes, fully. And people were asking me, once it became clear that Harvey was going to be pitching at Citi Field, they're like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do when he comes up to bat? Like, how are you going to approach that? And I'm like, I don't know. And the thing was, it turned out to be situational. So I'm in communications with our director, Brendan. And I was like, Brendan, what should I do? I'm like, he got a really nice ovation when he took the mound. I'm like, I should give him, you know, not a full 100% home team, but like announce him like a member of the Mets for that first at bat. And we'll do that for players when they're coming back. If they had a lasting impact or some sort of legacy or were a fan favorite, Wilmer Flores, when he came back, I gave him a full Wilmer Flores. And then for his next couple at bats, nope, you're the enemy now. That's it. You got your love. You're done. For Harvey, it was kind of touch and go, because before his at bat, I believe there were two men on base. And if whoever preceded him was got a big hit, a home run, a double, a single, or anything, a run was knocked in, the last thing we were going to want to do is act celebrational or celebratory for a member of the enemy. So if that guy had gotten a hit, then it would have been like the pitcher, Matt Harvey, and that would have been it. Fortunately for Matt and fortunately for me, that was not the case. I forget if it was a strikeout or a pop out. So I was able to say, you know, the pitcher, Matt Harvey, and they played his walk-up music. And it was a really, really cool moment to be part of, because never in a million years did I ever think I'd be, I mean, a professional baseball announcer, but announcing Matt Harvey at Citi Field in the year 2021, especially given the course of his career. So, you know, just it was a wild moment and one of those really, really cool moments where I'm just like, this is the coolest job in the world.
Yeah, I thought it was nice too how I don't know, this probably was on purpose, but I think you saw like the ump and Tomas Nito like take a few extra seconds. He like went out to the mound or something while fans were cheering for Harvey. And just like a little subtle thing that I feel like, you know, Mets fans obviously are very passionate about their team, but they also get very emotionally attached to players. And Harvey is certainly no exception, but there's a lot of former players that I think receive a lot of love when they come back, especially if they didn't leave, you know, on bad terms. Like Wilmer Flores, I think will always be cheered no matter what uniform he's in, at least in his first at bat when he comes back for the Mets. So there's certain players that I think, you know, deserve that little extra moment to allow the fans to cheer for them. And especially for Harvey, it was interesting too. He said in his post game presser that he was very emotional as well about the whole affair. And, you know, I guess the day ended up well for the Mets because fans got to cheer for Harvey and the Mets won the game fairly handily. So that was a nice combination. I'm certainly still rooting for the Mets against him because, you know, he's on the other team and my allegiance to the Mets will always kind of surpass my allegiance to any former player on the other team. But that's really great that you got to be part of that. And yeah, I wasn't at the game, but I certainly noticed watching on TV, you know, how much the stadium gave to him and how much he seemed to appreciate it.
Well, it's crazy too, because in our pregame, we have a Mets history video and it is all highlights going back, you know, 1962, any footage they've got of historic moments in the Mets history. And one of them is Matt Harvey's start at the 2013 All-Star Game, which was at Citi Field. And that electrifying moment where, you know, one of the Mets homegrown was there on the mound starting an All-Star Game in their home. And so we're like, you know, it's obviously it's ingrained. It's a part of the fabric of the Mets. And he brought a lot more than whatever off-field antics and injuries he had. And, you know, unfortunately going out for that one extra inning in the World Series, you know, that far surpasses it. You know, Harvey Day was Harvey Day for a reason. And so I thought it was a phenomenal job by the Mets fans, the ovation they gave, the respect they gave. And it was just a proud moment all the way around.
Yes, Jake, I saw you bow. So congratulations for being part of that crowd that cheered for him yesterday. I wish I could have been there. I certainly would have been cheering as well. So, well, good on all of you, however, 10,000 people that were there for making it a special day.
They made it sound like 40,000. That's all matters to us.
Yeah, it was loud. It was loud, and I was surprised. I mean, like I said, I wasn't there in the first inning. I saw videos of it after where they were cheering him when he first came out to the mound. But, yeah, in his first at-bat, I mean, I didn't expect him to get booed. You could even hear – I don't know if it was in left. Like, I was sitting down the third baseline, and I can hear a little bit in left field. People were trying to boo him a little, and I feel like that made people cheer even louder because they were cheering when he first came up. And then, yeah, like you said, when Nito kind of walked out in front of the home plate, which is something like Yadier Molina. I see him do a lot when people are going to get ovations, which is really nice. But, yeah, then it really picked up. And I thought it was a really nice moment. I was with my mom, and we were saying, wow, like, that's really nice with everything he's done. And like you said, he really did sacrifice his body and with that extra inning and all the innings he put on after coming off Tommy John. So I don't know why you could hate the guy. You know, I mean, he did some wrong, and he acknowledged that yesterday in his post-game press conference, which was also nice for him to acknowledge that and acknowledge the fans.
No, and I heard it too. I heard some boos, and I heard people drown him out. You know, and I thought it was very, very classy, you know, for the Mets fans to do. And again, good on you, Jake. Good on all the Mets fans.
I was cheering from home. I guess you didn't hear it on TV, but I did my best.
I felt it. I knew it. I was just like, somewhere Elizabeth is cheering.
Thank you. Thank you for that intuition. I'm sure. I appreciate it. Yeah, I guess we talked a little bit about a couple of very memorable games that you've worked at. You know, we talked about yesterday's game with Harvey. You talked a little bit about working at David Wright's last game in 2018. I guess I'm curious if there's any other particular games that stick out to you as being particularly memorable, either for something part of, you know, your job as the PA announcer or just in general, whether it was, you know, a remarkable game or just kind of something smaller that, you know, we might not be as aware of.
I would say announcing part of the 50th anniversary of the 69 Mets ceremony in 2019, the end of June 2019, was that was awesome. That was an honor, you know, announcing all of these Mets legends that have won, you know, World Series, their first World Championship. That's something that definitely stood out to me and stayed with me because that was also the night. That was the night that Ed Cranepool, you know, basically had a call to arms for the Mets that season, and things were not going particularly well, saying, you know, this is your time. You guys are young. Step up. You can do this. You can turn it around. Shortly thereafter, Pete Alonso wrote a letter and emblazoned the now eternal
started a movement. all on his own.
100%. And that was just a really cool thing. And that all culminated with that August 9th and 10th, especially against the Washington Nationals. And the Mets were on a serious tear. And there's a playoff environment. And I still have yet to announce a playoff game in Citi Field. But by God, that was about as close as it got. You know, you had the Conforto walk-off. And then you had a nail biter of a victory that was solidified by Seth Lugo, and both nights it was electric. And I have a video. It's pinned. It has been pinned since it happened on my Twitter of that night, and me thanking the fans for making it seem like a playoff game. And it is just me fanboying out with my phone, neglecting my job, and just going ballistic with everyone else. And that was a night that I'll never forget. But also doing the 9/11 ceremonies, as I mentioned, is that's very important to me. And doing opening day, you know, at Citi Field, being able to do that is just a really cool thing. It's a fresh start. You're there with a clean slate with the fans. Everyone's been dying for baseball. It's back, and you get to be a part of that electricity. And so those are the things that stand out the most to me.
So on a previous episode, a little while back, me and Elizabeth, we were both talking about games we had been to, like memorable games. And the most recent game I brought up was, I believe it's one of the games you're mentioning. It was the Luis Guillorme game where he hit the pinch hit home run in the eighth inning. It was Hawaiian shirt night. That I think that's the night you're talking about. But and the place was going nuts. And that was crazy. But I was at that game, and that was I've never seen, besides in the playoffs, like for a regular season game, I've never heard Citi Field rock like it did that night.
That was, trying to think if that was the same night. I do remember that. That is, yeah, anytime there's a walk-off, I believe Hawaiian shirt night was also, it happened to be like Pride night.
But I know Lugo closed out that game too. I heard you say Lugo, and I'm pretty sure that was the game. The place was going nuts. And that was the night before, I think Davis and Ramos went back-to-back, and Gary, Keith, and Ron in left field. It was the night after that. I was at the game the night after that weekend. Gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, it's gotten to the point now where it's all kind of a blur, but I remember the idea of what happened.
Yeah, I guess you're focused on everything else that's going on. You can't even always focus on everything that's, you know, it's hard to remember, I'm sure.
I've never seen so much live baseball in my life than I have in the past four seasons. It's hard to keep tabs. Trust me. That's why I go up to the ballpark. It's twofold. I'm like, my voice gets to fill up this ballpark. And also I'm getting paid to watch sports. I'm getting paid to watch baseball of a team that I love, no less. So it's just like, it's the whole thing is wild. I do not take it for granted. So I appreciate you saying that.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. Jake was mentioning that he was at that game August 10th, 2019. I think I've talked about it before, probably, how I was actually also at the game August 9th, the day before, on the Conforto walk-off game. And I feel like I've tweeted about this. I've talked about it a lot for whatever. Well, because that was also the last game that I've been to at Citi Field, you know, since before the pandemic. So like my kind of lasting memory until now of like what Citi Field is like at a great Mets game was that August 9th Conforto walk-off game. And I'm glad to hear that it was as kind of fun to experience from the booth as it was from the stands. I was sitting somewhere in left field, not like under the overhang. I forget it. Somewhere along the left field line, like in the field level. And yeah, it was absolutely raucous. That, and I didn't even notice that Gary, Keith, and Ron were sitting in the M&M party deck like until after the game, until I realized, it's like, oh my God, they were like right over there the whole time. And you know, at the game, I'm not listening to them. So I didn't really think about it. But yeah, that, man, I haven't actually been to a game yet back at Citi Field this year, but it seems like from people who have gone, they've been filling it up with as much noise as they possibly can. So I can't wait to lend my voice to that crowd. But I agree. I mean, that August 9th game in 2019, definitely the best Mets game I've ever been to. I never went to any of the 2015 playoff games because I was at school, but one day I will be there, and hopefully it will be even louder. But I'm glad to hear that was as memorable for you as it was for the two of us that weekend.
100%. I mean, we all go nuts. You know, we all want the team, especially in production, and I'd say a good at least 75-80% of the people that work in production are Mets fans. But even the ones that are Yankees fans, and this is, you know, this is just a job, they're rooting for the Mets. They want the Mets to do well, because when you're in the in-game production, what you do, everything you do, is weighed upon how the Mets are doing, and you want them to do well. You want it to be a joyous, vibrant, enjoyable environment for the fans and for everyone there. And if the Mets aren't doing well, it's frustrating. for the people who aren't fans, because, you know, you're not playing as much music or hype stuff, or, you know, you're reading the crowd and playing off of the vibe in the ballpark. So everyone wants them to do well, but for, you know, for people who are actual fans, like, yeah, we're going nuts. We're going absolutely ballistic.
It must be, I can only imagine how fun it is, especially when the team's winning, because it's got to be more of like a somber feeling in there when they have a horrible loss. It's not as exciting. So I'm sure you guys definitely benefit off of a win, not just from the team, but just from like an environment perspective.
Well, you know, it's funny when Maddie and I started, she had Friday, June 1st. I had Saturday, June 2nd against the Cubs in 2018. And that was the season where the Mets had started 11-1 for the first time, like, ever. And then the wheels quickly came off, and we came in at a time when it was just like things were looking really dire and we're not turning around at all. It was baptism by fire. You know, like to see what it's like. Like my first game, the Mets and Cubs went to extra innings. It went 13 innings. I had my first ever double switch that I announced because Joe Maddon was still the manager of the Cubs, and that guy loves to micromanage, and I hate you, Joe Maddon. You know, it was everything in one game, and we lost. So it was just like such an important night for me in my career. But it was
welcome to the show. Yeah,
it had overshadowed by the fact that like everything was falling apart around me. So it was like, what can you do? That's just baseball.
So I guess I'm curious, Colin. You know, we've talked a lot about, you know, the different things that you've done in your career up to this point. I know you're also starting to do some announcing work with the Brooklyn Cyclones, which, you know, thank God minor league baseball is back. I'm sure I would love to go to a Cyclones game at some point in the near future. I've never been. But, you know, I'm kind of curious now that you have several different kind of sports broadcasting gigs going and you've worked in a few different areas, if there's like a particular something in your career that you haven't yet accomplished that you're really interested in, or what do you anticipate kind of growing the work that you're doing now into, or like, what would you like that to be at least?
I mean, I literally just kind of solidified one of my goals, which was to be a year round PA announcer when Stony Brook University hired me to do their football and their men's and women's basketball, because you know, the Mets start up at the end of March, beginning of April, depending on the year. Cyclones, I haven't even started yet. I train next week, and then I haven't even been to the ballpark yet. Because it was never really convenient for me to get down to Coney Island. Now it's going to have to be, so I'm going to have to grin and bear it with the Belt Parkway. Yay! But then, you know, the Riptide typically start up in December, and they go through April. So with Stony Brook, I'll be doing their football, you know, September, October. Their basketball starts up in November. Riptide starts up in December. That goes through to April, and boom, it's the Mets again. So being a year-round PA announcer was definitely something that I'd set my sights on. But end game is to be announcing during a championship game, during a World Series, during something along those lines. The March Madness for women's lacrosse is going on right now, but it's obviously May, so it's May Madness. I don't even know what they call it. But they're playing a series of games at Stony Brook University's Lavelle Stadium, and they asked me if I'd come and do a game. So I actually get to do my first ever NCAA tournament of any sort, PA announcing, tomorrow, which is
kind of cool. Oh, congrats. That's awesome.
It actually just came to my mind. I'm glad I should probably write that down on my calendar. But yeah, to call a championship, or to be one of the PA announcers that is asked to do an all-star game or something like that. Like, I can't believe I'm blanking on his name. He's got just one of the best voices. He does the PA for, he did the Super Bowl this year. Like, the dude's just got like a voice I'll never have. He's got a true voice of God. And again, you know, to your listeners, I'm battling severe allergies right now. So, this is not, you know, I don't normally sound like this.
To the stadium to hear peak Colin's voice. We understand.
Yeah, because then I'll do all the exercises necessary to make sure it at least is like passable. But you know, to do a major sporting event and an Olympics, you know, a Super Bowl and a Winter Classic for the NHL, anything like that. But I would love to become a hockey announcer. I would never want to take another man's job. But if Joe Tolleson were to say I'm retiring tomorrow, I would come knocking on his door and be like, hey, can you put in a good word for me? The dude doesn't know me. We've never met. But still, I would, that'd be a dream come true.
That would be amazing. I can only imagine how nerve wracking that's got to be a PA announcer for a Super Bowl or with so many people watching. Cause especially during the Super Bowl, like you hear the PA announcer on TV announce certain things. It's not just the people in the stadium. Not saying in other sports you don't, but you really hear it in this. So that would be incredible.
I listen, for me, it's the bigger the audience, the better. Again, if it's going to be 1 billion people across this globe listening to my voice, then I'm on cloud nine and I will never be more confident going into that microphone. I mean, there'll be nerves, there'll be butterflies, of course. You know, if you're not, you're complacent, you know, that, which is true for anything. You know, nerves are a sign of caring, but there's got to be the confidence behind it. You know, that's that Michael Jordan mentality. Yeah, there's nerves there, but you're out there to get a job done and you want to do it well and do it to the best of your ability. So you just have to overcome them somehow. And so I would love that. I would give anything to have the entire planet listening to me talking to a microphone, which sounds really narcissistic, but it's just like, this is what I'd love to do. And I want to reach as many people as possible and inform them of.
Hey, you've come this far. Why?
Yeah. Why stop here? Why stop at just the Citi Field audience? May as well put it out to 100 million on TV. So
I remember the first time GKR did a toss to me during a ceremony and I got a text and they're like, Gary Cohn just tossed to you. Like, they're just like, and now we turn it over to public address announcer Colin Gosell. And then I got my cue and I didn't know that was happening until like my phone blew up and like, Gary just said to our B announcer Colin Gosell. And I'm like, no way. You know, like that's cool. Yeah, it was really cool. Unfortunately, if there's a ceremony or something like that, or if, you know, like especially early in my career with the Mets, I would set up the DVR so I could come home and see if I could hear myself, see how it sounded, make kind of mental notes, because I'm never fully satisfied with myself. I am a hardcore perfectionist, and I will rip myself down and build myself back up again time after time until I get it right. And even then, I'll be like, this could always be better. So I just happen to have that one recorded, and that one is stored in the DVR to my left.
Nice. That's awesome. And okay, so I really just have one other question. I'm wondering, with the noted ownership change between Steve Cohen and the Wilpons, have you noticed any kind of shift in the organization from where you're at, or have you had any interactions with him or noticed any kind of difference or excitement or anything going on around the organization?
I mean, you know, it's one of those things where obviously it's a whole new energy, you know, it's a whole new ownership. It's a whole new vibe. You know, I have nothing but great things to say about the Wilpons, because Fred Wilpon was a dear friend of my grandfather's, and was very, very kind to my family after my grandfather had passed away. And also because they gave me my big break in this industry. And for that, they are forever in my Hall of Fame. I understand that fans did not feel the same way, but we all have our reasons for feeling the way we feel about people. And, you know, there's, when you work in the industry and on the business side of things, you have a different viewpoint other than, you know, they're not doing what I want them to do. And I'd be a better GM, you know, from my Twitter account on my couch and in my home in Mineola. You know, there's a lot more to it that people don't really consider. With that said, obviously with Steve coming in, Uncle Steve, I've not met him yet. I've heard unbelievable things about him and his wife, Alex. You know, they're, you know, very, very chill, but very, you know, very focused on the prize. They've got their eyes on the prize. And Steve is a lifelong Mets fan. And he's literally living out the dream of anyone who, you know, like, if you're filthy rich, what would you do? I would buy my favorite team and run them. Like, and he gets to live out that dream. He wants a championship as bad as you do, as bad as I do, as bad as the players do, and is going to do whatever it takes to put that into place, even if that means going broke in the process. And, you know, I think this is a very, very exciting time to be a Mets fan. And I think the cautious optimism will soon turn to straight up optimism and reason for real hope.
There you go.
That's what Mets fans want to hear right there.
Well, thank you, Colin. We want to thank
you. Should anything go wrong, not tweet at me. Don't at me, bro. Don't. Nope. I will be hiding under a table or behind my booth and I will get the windows frosted.
Yeah. Well, with that said, actually, before we wrap up, we would just like you to let our listeners know where they can follow you on Twitter, any other social medias that you're at. Like I said, I followed you for a while and you're very entertaining. So would highly recommend following Colin, any Mets fans listening to this, but yeah, let them know where they can find you online.
On Twitter, it's at CoselPA, which after I started that account, I realized that people thought I might be in Pennsylvania, but it does stand for public address. So at CoselPA on Instagram, which I use seldomly, is the other Cosell. And then for my podcast, The Sport of Entertainment, at TSOE Show And they can catch that on all major platforms, but mostly Spotify. I like Spotify the most. So look up The Sport of Entertainment and learn even more about what goes on behind the curtain, what goes on behind the scenes, and everything that entertains us in and around sports. So yeah, thank you. Check it out. Follow me. I'll try to be entertaining. I'm always going to be positive. We'll have some fun. Why not?
Awesome. Well, we appreciate it. And, you know, as always, you can follow me on Twitter at NYMFan97. You can follow Jake at Giblin_Jake. And you can also follow Cohen's Corner Pod on Twitter to follow our podcast, keep up with our latest episodes and all the guests that we've had on. So, yeah, thank you so much again, Colin. We'll wrap up this week's episode. And as always, let's go Mets.